Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Aiken City Council meeting of November 8th, 2004. We're glad to have everyone with us. And we welcome the Leadership Aiken County Group with us to observe tonight and to participate in any way you'd like to. If you would, please, as we start our meeting, if you'd stand with us for our prayer and a pledge of allegiance.
Let us please bow our heads for a moment of prayer. Our most gracious and heavenly Father, again we pause to give thanks and praise to Thee. You've allowed us once again to enter these chambers without any harm coming to any of us here or our families and our friends. And for this, O dear Father, we say thank you. Thank you for our life, thank you for strength, and thank you for health. We also thank you, dear Father, for helping us to get past another major election on the national scale. There were some winners and some losers. And dear Father, even though there were some losers, we ask you to go with them, but we ask you to go with the winners, the outcome of this election, as these new and re-elected leaders serve in their capacity, go with them with wisdom and guidance, and help us, dear Father, to foster whatever they're doing and work as a team to achieve the goals that you would have us to achieve. As we address the council meeting this afternoon, we ask that, Father, that you go with us the agenda items, guide us in the right direction, and whatever we do, dear Father, we will always be mindful to give you the honor, the glory, and the praise. In your name we pray. Amen.
Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any additions or deletions necessary to the agenda?
I have one addition, Mr. Mayor, and that is a point of clarification to add regarding the Culture Center that Wade Brody has to ask a question regarding.
Okay, why don't we put that under petitions and requests then? Cultural Center. Discussion. Okay, anything else? If not, do we have a motion and a second to accept the agenda?
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. First item is the consideration of the minutes of the work session and the regular meeting of October 25th, 2004, and the work session of October 27th, 2004. Any changes necessary there?
Mr. Mayor, I do have a problem with the minutes of the regular meeting as concerning the write-up on the ordinance amending the code to adopt the traffic management ordinance. And the write-up really doesn't seem to be like minutes. It really seems to be more like a statement. And as far as I can see, if left out specific things that were said, and I really don't think that's the way to go in writing this kind of a minute. And my point is that I know that you made some very complimentary mention of the thing, and that it would be a very good thing for the future. And I think Leslie also did, and as it happened, of course, I noticed it because I also said a few things, and none of that is in there. And I really think we need to go back to the tapes and include in there what was actually said by the people rather than just a sort of a summary.
Okay. I do know one thing, that, you know, the minutes, they're not necessarily every word.
Well,
now what?
We started recording them,
right.
We were trying to get it all in there.
Right.
And, well, specifically, I know that you made some good comments, so we've been working on it for a long time,
right.
And that...
Right.
you thought it would. I see, the problem is I don't remember the exact words. That's why we're supposed to be having minutes that do say that. Mm-hmm. And I know Cressy also made a good comment about it. And, of course, I also said that while it's not perfect, it represents a fair compromise.
Yes,
and,
it did.
Indeed, that it was the culmination of 3.5 years of work. And I think mm-hmm. that that's an important thing to have included in the minutes.
Okay.
All right. Well, you want to just amend the minutes to those statements, and if Leslie and the mayor want to include theirs, rather than
that would be fine. But I really do think that we need those sorts of things in the minutes.
Well, Dick, I don't disagree with you at all. I think that when someone speaks, we ought to have something that reflects at least the basic piece of what they're saying.
It can summarize it if we get too long.
Just to summarize it. Not to say the whole thing necessarily, but at least give the major point of what they're saying.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, I think most of the time that's covered, but I think I don't disagree with what you're saying here. Sarah, you have that ability, of course, to make these changes. You've got the tape. You keep them. They're on disc now. For everybody's knowledge, I guess they're on the disc now. And it'll be made available, I think, legally for 6 months, should someone come in and want a copy. I think that's the law. So could we go back? Would you agree that we could go back and amend this particular piece? Do you have any? This is very important, I think, because it is something we worked on for well over 2 years, probably 3 years. I think your points are well taken, Dick. Could we just make those, go back to that particular part, that particular issue? Would that satisfy?
And include the comments that we all made.
And include the comments that we made, all of us made, and then we'd have that as an addendum to the next minutes, I guess, the next meeting minutes. Gary, does that sound okay?
I just want to make sure Sarah understands what council's desire is. I mean, the purpose of the minutes is to reflect the discussion about the ordinance itself and whatever changes may have been proposed during a public hearing and that sort of thing. I don't know that they're necessarily supposed to reflect every comment that was made during the discussion. If Sarah knew it, a particular comment that you were looking for, I mean, certainly there's nothing wrong with council wanting to have the minutes be more specific. I just think that Sarah needs to guide it so she knows what to do when she comes back to you.
Well, perhaps this is an issue we need to talk about a little bit later when we have more time to talk about exactly what do we want the minutes to reflect. I've noticed times there are things that I've said or others have said that are not in the minutes that wasn't that important to me.
The purpose of the minutes is not to reflect everything that's said at a meeting. I mean, Sarah wouldn't be able to. Think she'd be able to transcribe all of that for
us. I know that, but if somebody
they need some context once in a while as to how it was passed and why it was passed.
Yes, sir. And I think Sarah just needs to understand how you want the minutes to be. I mean, do you want to do a transcript of do a verbatim transcript for that, and then have them pick out what they want and what they don't want?
Wouldn't it be better once we read it, and if there's something that the council feels like was discussed that they wanted in the written minutes, they bring it up now. If there's something you want to say, please add this because it was discussed. Because think about it, you have to put all this in the doggone discussion at the next meeting, and I certainly wouldn't want to hear this again.
Right.
That seems to me, if you want to include it now, saying please add the discussion that of your comment that you had, and go back just to that one section and say put that in.
Yeah, but then how about the others?
Well, I mean, that's up to them.
I don't think it's up to them. It transpired.
Well, I mean, I said something during it, too, but whether I think it's relevant, what he's saying is this is not the court recorder here. This is a general discussion of what happened. If I felt there's something I said that I wanted to be in these minutes, I would say, please put those comments in. I don't feel like anything I said should be. You do, Leslie, you may, and the mayor, you may. So those comments should be included in the, as long as you feel that way.
That's the appropriate way to handle it.
Yeah.
But is it, it's appropriate for the council members to say that we want this in the minutes and not that in the minutes?
It's appropriate for a majority of council to ascertain what should be in the minutes. If a majority of council thinks Mr. Smith's comments should be included in the minutes, then that's, would make the, that would make the minutes official. If council wants to provide Sarah with new guidance as to how you want minutes to be drafted in the future, that would be something else for another discussion. But if Councilmember Smith, you know, if Councilmember Smith wants to have his comments included in the minutes, and a majority of council disagrees with him, then they're not necessarily entitled to be in the minutes.
I guess my point is that until Jane and I came on council 3.5 years ago, we really didn't pay quite as much attention. A lot of what transpired in the work session.
Right. But this was during a public session. This was during a public session out here.
Right.
During a regular meeting of council. And those have always been recorded.
But they were certainly not reduced to the minutes in the same degree that they were more recently, let's put it that way. And the purpose was to make sure that everyone knew what council was doing, what they were saying, what their feelings are. I think it's not just a matter of minutes in meetings I've ever been to really include a lot of extraneous matter, but I don't consider my comments or the mayor's or Leslie's were extraneous. They were a part of the whole issue. We have something that took 3.5 years to accomplish. It's an accomplishment, and we did talk about it, and I think it should be duly recorded in the public minutes.
Well, I would just suggest, for a matter of procedure, if you have language that you would like to see added to the minutes, you should make that as part of your motion and then have council vote on it.
Yeah.
And see how council wants to do that. That's the appropriate way to modify the minutes.
Yeah. And it puts Sarah in a dilemma. This last meeting lasted 5 hours and 18 minutes. And for her to try to just transcribe over 5 hours of minutes would take her most of the time period in between. We have always tried to use the best judgment in putting down what we think should be listed and what shouldn't be, especially when we get speakers that come before us and have things that they want to say. But again, we could always improve and do better. And so if there are things that you would like to see more in the future, just let us know and we'll try to do that.
But on this particular issue, if Dick says we need to put the comments that I made, and it's up to Leslie and the mayor, if they think they're comments, then we could go back to that and add that into the minutes, and that would be, and I certainly would second that motion if that's what we want to do. And we could do that every time. You read through it and say, wait a minute, I thought this comment was important but really the transcript is the original. We do have it's kept for a long time, so if anybody wants to.
Yeah, but it's not publicized, and it's not really available to the public per se. And indeed, it can get lost in the fullness of time if we wanted to refer back to it.
Okay. The previous history has been, Mayor, that if something was omitted from the minutes, we would bring that to council and say, I'd like to offer this as an amendment to what you have. And that's what mm-hmm. Dick is doing. Mm-hmm. And I've been perfectly satisfied over the years with Sarah. I just admire the amount of time it takes for her to record all the things that we say. But I take it seriously what Dick is saying in terms of the length of time that we spent working on this one item that he wants to make sure that as the history, that when somebody looks back on it, they have a complete history of knowing the amount of time that we took to discuss this subject.
Right.
But in terms of changing our procedure, that's not necessary.
Well, I would be pleased to not, so that we don't spend too much time on this, to make a motion that basically, with regard to the specific comments made by individual council people about the ordinance after it was passed. I think it was all in that, to just take those and include those in the minutes. If we could amend the minutes that way, I'd be happy.
I don't care if my comments are in there or not. They're not important. At the time I said them, and I said what I said, and that's gone now. I think, Dick, let's get back to what Leslie just said. Why don't you state what you want to be included in the minutes?
Oh, let's go from there.
Anybody else want to include anything in the minutes, speak up, and then let's move on. We got to move on. Now, I think this might be a subject that we need to talk about at a later time in a work session, if you want to. And get more specific. It does seem to me that when people come to that mic over there, that public, and speak, we capture their thoughts. If I'm not mistaken, we always capture their thoughts. I'm looking through the minutes now, and I see different people's names that came and talked. So what is the difference than capturing the city council members' thoughts and put them all together? You don't have to get every word we say or anything like that. But capture the thought after you read the minutes, you get the minutes, you know, just a sentence or two of what the council member said, if the council member says anything. I see nothing wrong with that. I think that's the, again, we capture the citizens' talk. Why not capture what city council is saying? But as far as this particular issue is concerned, I'm not concerned with that. If you want to add your thoughts to it, Dick, let's do it.
Oh.
And then we'll I think we ought to talk about it if council wants to talk about it in the future. If not, I think what we ought to do is that if you say something in a meeting and you want to make sure it's in the minutes, just tell Sarah that. Just make a point of it. I'd like for this to be in the minutes. That's another way of doing it, because we don't want everything we say in the minutes. I mean, golly. But if we say something that we really think is important for whatever reason, then I think we could say it right in the mic. And then when Sarah's listening to the disc, listening to the minutes, she can get that message from us. If we're saying, please, you know, we'd like this to be in the minutes. What's wrong with that?
Again, what I would like to have in the minutes is what the mayor said, and Leslie said, and what I said, period. I mean, it seems to me perfectly acceptable to do that. If you said them and you met them then, why not have them in the minutes now, whether you care for them or not?
What's the motion? What's the motion, Dick?
The motion is that we amend the minutes to include, and it can be a condensation of the statements made by the mayor, by myself, and Leslie in support of the passing of the ordinance. That's all.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second.
Okay. Any other discussion?
Just for clarification, but we're not asking Sarah to change anything.
No,
if we read the minutes and we think something should be added, we'll come in like today and say, this is
right.
What we want
right.
to have,
right.
those
yeah.
things.
Right.
As long as we could. I don't want to put any more. We've had 15 minutes of discussion on the
right.
minutes.
I apologize for that, and I should have read them through earlier. Had I done so, I would probably have called Roger, and we could have worked something out earlier.
Well, you know, or you.
But I haven't seen the exact text, but I do know when everybody agrees something was said.
I agree.
Okay, any other discussion? If not, show of hands. All in favor of that? All right. That's three people's comments, right? Is that what we've said?
We got it.
Okay.
All right. Seeing what else was to join.
All right. Now that's to change that particular item of the minutes. Now, do we have a motion to approve the minutes then with that change that we just approved?
I move that we approve the minutes as written with corrections and additions, Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
Second.
All right. Any discussion on that? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor of that? Okay. Passes unanimously. First item under presentations is a recognition of Officer Sean Rayner. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, this is a great day that we're able to have in the last month a couple of different officers that won the top award at the Academy. This is the first time that we had an officer win the top award at the South Carolina Fire Academy. And Pete, if you'd like to get up to the podium here, and I'll let you go ahead and do the presentation. And Sean, I see you have your family here. Why don't you come on and stand up?
Of course, you all of you know I'm very proud of my officers. We have a great staff up there. I'd say currently at Public Safety, we have three officers employed who have won the J.P. Strong Award, but we've never had an officer win the Chief Robert Frick Award, and that's the highest award you can win at the Fire Academy. With this, Sean graduated in October, and he won that award. The good thing about Sean, he holds another record too, is because at the time he went to the Criminal Justice Academy, he was employed with Springdale Police Department, and he won the J.P. Strong Award when he was employed with them. Sean is a local person. Went to a school, graduated from South Aiken High. When he graduated, he went to Columbia, spent a few years there, and realized he wanted to be back home again. And of course, we were more than welcome to get him back in Aiken. So this is the award he won. And there again, I just wanted to let you have a chance to meet Sean and tell him congratulations.
Great. Congratulations.
You want to introduce your family?
Yes.
That's too long. Yeah.
My family, my daughter Shelly, my daughter Sarah, and Kyla.
Mr. Mayor, I just have to say how moved I was when we were doing the pledge. I heard these two little voices out there reciting the Pledge of Allegiance, and I think that's probably that they're following in their mom and dad's footsteps.
Right, really right. Sean, we're very proud of you, and we're really glad you're with us, with the City of Aiken Public Safety. Thank you for what you're doing, and thank you for your outstanding work at the academies. And thank the family, too. Your wife, who was very supportive, had to be very supportive. We know that. So thank you very much.
Most of all, thanks for coming back to Aiken.
Yes. And thank you all, too, for being here. You little people.
Daddy,
some pom-poms.
That second item under presentations is the recognition of the farmers market. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, this one probably won't be quite as exciting, but it's just as important. The farmers market's been in operation continuously at the same location for 53 years. And Colleen Reed has done an extensive amount of research concerning the farmers market, and we felt it would be very appropriate to have a resolution concerning the fact that it's been there. It's the longest in the state of South Carolina. And there's a little bit of method to the madness here in the fact that with this resolution we're going to be asking for some grants to possibly do some upgrades at the farmers market. So tonight we're asking you to pass a resolution recognizing the farmers market for its continuous history and what it provides here to all the citizens within our community.
Okay, thank you. Why don't I read this resolution? It will only take 15-20 minutes. Whereas the local government should recognize the significant achievements and history of people and places in its jurisdiction, whereas the Aiken County Farmers Market has been operated and supported by the city and the county of Aiken, and whereas the Aiken County Farmers Market has been in continuous operation as an open-air market for farmers since 1951. whereas the Aiken County Farmers Market has continually operated since its opening in 1951 on Williamsburg Street in Aiken, and whereas on September 8, 2003, the Aiken County Farmers Market was formally designated as an historical site by the Aiken City Council, and whereas the Farmers Market of Columbia and Greenville are of similar age as Aiken, but have not been continuously operated by their respective counties or cities, and have relied at times on the state of South Carolina to support and manage. And whereas extensive research compiled by Colleen Reed has shown that no other known city or county operated open-air market as existed in continuous operation at a single location within any incorporated municipality of South Carolina for a longer period of time than that found in Aiken. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Council of the City of Aiken hereby declares that at 53 years, the Farmers Market of Aiken County, located on Williamsburg Street, southeast, and incorporated boundaries of the City of Aiken and South Carolina's oldest and longest-serving farmers market, still occupying its original location and remaining in continuous operation, adopted by the Council of the City of Aiken at a regular meeting held November 8, 2004, a quorum being present and voting. So we congratulate the farmers market, certainly, and Colleen and her leadership at this time, and all the leadership that's been there all these years and in past years as well. Now,
is she here, sir?
You want to ask
Colleen?
She's in the back.
She's always in the back, yeah. Colleen, would you like to say a word or two? You have some of your folks with you?
Mr. Mayor and members of the City Council, on behalf of all the farmers at the Farmers Market, I'd like to thank you very much for the resolution, and I'd also like to thank the Historic Preservation Commission for their resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, and many more years.
But without Glenn Parker and the support of Parks, Recreation, and Tourism, we wouldn't be where we are today. And without the support of the city and the council.
Thank you. Thank you, Glenn. You and your staff have done a super job there. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor, may I add a comment, if you don't mind?
Yeah.
Colleen has been just energized over history and research. And this has been an exciting project for her. She's worked on it for some time. And whenever I go down to the farmer's market, if I don't hear first, have you seen Beverly Cliburn? She was just here at the farmer's market. It's Colleen sharing with me about what she's found recently with the history of the farmer's market. And she's also doing some other research. She's a history buff and spends her time and energy traveling, researching with the state and other places with history in our county. And I personally thank her for time and efforts.
Well, thank you, Leslie. And we all thank you. Now we need a motion and a second, and then we'll approve this.
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Yes, sir.
Mr. Mayor, it's also my intention to reappoint Mr. Edward Gill to the Planning Commission. And
okay, on that. Okay. Okay.
Got to keep him on the straight since he's here tonight.
Our next item is the appointment to boards and commissions. So, Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. We have three appointments before you tonight. Councilmember Smith would like to appoint Don Broderick, who would be replacing Jack Wetzel. His term is expiring in December. Councilwoman Waters would like to reappoint Wilkins Byrd to the Planning Commission, and Councilwoman Price would like to appoint Ronnie Bolton to the Aviation Commission.
Okay. Is there any reason we can't take these all at one time? If not, do we have a motion?
So, Mr. Mayor, that we approve these committee appointments.
Do we have a second?
Second.
Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Beverly? That's all right. Okay, passes unanimous. Item 2 is the second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to rezone 5.7 acres north of Spencer Drive from general business to residential multifamily. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir. I'll read this by title only. It's an ordinance amending the zoning of real estate owned by ADs LLC from general business GB to residential multifamily high density. They own 5.7 acres, which is located basically behind the Target shopping center. The property that's right behind the Target Center itself is in general business zoning, and they would like to have that as residential multifamily high density, which means they more than likely will have some type of an apartment complex in that area. In turn, council had asked that an area which is near the high power lines, which is currently under the PUD zoning for residential high density, would revert to single family attached, which is similar to what he's putting in his other areas. So basically what we're doing is we're moving the residential high density area to behind Target, which is much more appropriate for it. This is the second reading of this ordinance. Council did pass at the October 25th meeting on first reading, and it's an ordinance to rezone property from general business to residential multifamily high density between Spencer Drive and the sewer line. For the property west of the sewer line and east of Spencer Drive, the property would be rezoned LP.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is the second reading and public hearing of this ordinance, so if there's anyone in the audience that would like to speak on this particular ordinance, you certainly may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
So moved, Mr. Mayor.
I'll second this, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, any discussion?
A couple of things that I wanted to ask about. If it's residential multifamily high density, the tree ordinance will apply to this property?
Yes, it would.
Okay, because I think we do need to address the tree ordinance at some other time, but Leslie and I were talking about the sad state of on Barnwell Avenue where all those trees were removed, and it was because it was in a zone where we really don't have anything to say about it, and yet it is devastating for that area. So this would have some kind of a plan,
yes,
or a design. Also, how tall are these? Is there any height? Is it 50 feet? Or?
Well, there is a 50-foot height limit. I believe these were three stories that he was proposing, or two stories. Okay, Woody Belange is back there. Would you like Woody to come to the podium?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Whatever.
Okay. Anything else?
What about that comment about the comprehensive plan? Why we need to be sure we state, you know, it says comprehensive plan recommends that the subject property be low density residential. A motion to recommend rezoning to allow use contrary to the plan should state the reason why.
Anytime we go ahead and change the comprehensive plan, we council should have a good reason why they're doing it, that making those changes. At the last council meeting, in fact, I think it was Councilwoman Waters that had made the recommendation that all we're actually doing is changing one residential high density area to another area. So we're eliminating the residential high density from the one area of the PUD and moving it to this new location. So we're in essence not changing the comprehensive plan overall. We're just moving it from one area to the other. I believe that.
I don't think I said that. I don't know who said it, but I don't know that I understood that.
Okay.
Okay.
I think the case in point here is that normally what you do with planning is you try to do there's residential, slightly higher density, and then next to the commercial you would have,
right,
your apartments, whatever. That's the progression. What we did was we shifted the area next to Elmwood to residential, which is, I think, is better planning than what was originally approved. Mm-hmm. That's what we talked about.
Mm-hmm. And that would be the statement then that we would,
right,
make.
Exactly. That's the reason why we feel like it's, mm-hmm, important that we would change the comprehensive plan, because that makes more sense in this particular PUD to do that.
Well put.
Thank you.
Okay.
I just wanted to be sure that the developer understood that in this zone, there is, the tree ordinance does apply, right?
Mm-hmm. Okay, any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, it passes. Pat, did you vote? Yes, we passes unanimously. Item 3 is a second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance regarding planned unit development zone. Mr. LaDuke, please.
Yes, I'll read this again by title only. It's an ordinance amending the City of Aiken zoning ordinance regarding planned unit development regulations. This, again, is a revision that we've been discussing for well over a year. The Planning Commission made a unanimous recommendation that these changes be made. Again, a couple of highlights is that PUDs used to be 5 acres. This has been reduced to 4 acres. It allows them to have up to 8 units per acre within this PUD, where before it was 12 units. At the last meeting, we discussed whether or not they should continue to be able to have up to 5% of a PUD to have commercial in it. Council changed that portion so that it reflects, yes, you can have 5% commercial, but it only is on parcels that are 10 acres or higher. Another area that you did discuss, and that was reducing accessory buildings from 5 feet to 3 feet. I had the BZA, a couple of members asked me about that, and they were pleased that it gives them a little bit more direction as to what council feels on accessory buildings, because that's something that we'll be discussing in the future. But you did say that accessory buildings could be up to or within 3 feet of another property. And the last thing that's of some importance is the fact that the buildings have to be at least 10 feet from adjoining property lines. So, again, those are some of the highlights of it. Council did approve this at the first reading on October 25th. This is second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to amend the planned unit development zoning classification, which in the future would be called planned residential, since we have a planned commercial for the other PUDs.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is second reading public hearing of this ordinance, and if there's anyone like to speak on this ordinance, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
May I move to amend the planned unit development zoning classification?
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay. Passes unanimously. Item 4 is the second reading public hearing of an ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance regarding posting for City Council meetings. Mr. LaDuke, please.
Yes, sir. Again, I'll read this by title. It's an ordinance amending Section 6 of the zoning ordinance regarding notice requirements for annexations, rezonings, or the provision of city utilities to out-of-city customers. Council a while back asked us to start posting all public hearings at a period of 20 days in advance of those hearings. One of the problems that we ran into on several occasions is the fact that we do not necessarily know when the Planning Commission passes an ordinance whether or not when that 20-day period should start. There are times when the applicant will withdraw for a period of time, and therefore the first reading gets delayed. There are other times that council has asked for additional information, and so it gets delayed between the first and second reading. And so when we post this, and it says the public hearing is going to be on a particular day, we have had at least probably 10 occasions in the last year when that did not happen. In other words, the public hearing did not happen the day that we had posted. This has caused confusion with residents. Although on many occasions they would call up to our planning department and ask whether that's going to be on the agenda or not, and we'd say no, they would still show up because they were that concerned about it. We feel that we will know almost definitely 7 days in advance of a public hearing, and we could then post it and feel fairly confident of the fact that that will be on the agenda with City Council. Again, they are posted for the Planning Commission meetings so that the public does know when the Planning Commission will be hearing those particular items. And so we're asking that you amend this ordinance so that instead of being 20 days advance notice for posting, we would then post it at a 7-day period. This is a second reading public hearing consideration of an ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance regarding the posting of city council public hearings.
Okay, thank you, sir. Before we go to the public for any comments they might have, I'd like for us to consider maybe making that 10 days instead of 7. But I'd like to understand what problems that would present. I've gotten several phone calls about the 7 days. Now, having said that, let's remember that prior to even posting, which has been something we've done just recently, relatively recently, we weren't posting at all. And then we decided certainly it's a good idea to post and let the neighbors and everybody know what's going on. So we chose 20 days. Now we have experience with 20 days. And what it's telling us, I think, is that we need to narrow that down a little bit to eliminate some of the confusion that comes up. But what would be wrong with kind of a compromise here and making it 10 days? Does that present any problems, or
is it? Or is it the amendment is to require posting 20 days? We do it 20 days in advance now, correct? That what we require.
That is correct. That's which right. Is before the public hearing or before the first reading even occurs.
I wouldn't see that there's a. Why not 14 days? Why not the 2 weeks? Give them 2 weeks to. And I know what you're saying, Roger, but you could change a meeting. If it's 7 days, they could still. I mean, people are pulling things off and on agendas all the time. So 14 days seems to me to give people plenty of time to. And what it is, I mean, I got the same calls that you got, Mr. Mayor, from the people in Hounds Lake, and they say they wouldn't have had enough time. And I have to agree with them. I mean, it doesn't. I know it may cause us. If it's causing our citizens problems, but our citizens want to keep some more time, I think we're better off doing what the citizens want. I think 14 days is a reasonable amount, Mr. Mayor.
One of the concerns for those who may not know is some issues that we have when our citizens want to get a petition going and want to go around and visit with the neighbors and tell them about the situation. They need a little time to do this, and they don't think 7 days is necessarily enough time to do an adequate job of letting the neighbors know what's going on and getting their views on it. And we had the situation at Hounds Lake, and that's why it's coming up. Now, that may not happen again for who knows how many years, but yet it could happen again. So, you know, I'm just searching, and I think we're searching for something that seems fair on both sides, not 20 days, but not necessarily 7 days either. Any other thoughts on this?
The question of going to 7 days was I think, really an administrative problem we were trying to solve rather than a informational problem for the public. Isn't that really the...
We know 7 days in advance pretty much what's going to be on the agenda.
Yeah.
I pretty well close the books on the agenda the Tuesday before the meeting, so I get out on Thursday. 10 days just means that there might be occasionally, and I would say occasionally, a situation where someone could still withdraw something. 14 days is not a good number, only because 14 days we have to post it before this meeting, and if it gets canceled at this meeting or you ask for more information, it's going to get delayed. The very minimum, I would say, would be 13 or maximum.
But if you do 13, then they will not know about the first reading, and they would not have the opportunity to come to the meeting and hear the discussion on the first reading of a proposal. And whether they speak or not, sometimes they do and sometimes they don't, as you know. It's helpful, I think, for citizens to hear comments on the first reading. They can learn more about, sometimes they may decide they don't need to oppose something if they hear the comments that are made. My other thought, I was thinking about it since the last time, because we talked a long time about it. about putting a statement on that placard, something such as meeting dates are subject to change. Please call this number to verify the date, or just something that specific that would notify people that it may not be on that date, you know. And I don't know. I just wondered, 14 days would be up in time for them to know of the first reading? No.
Yeah, they know, they should know, because I believe at the Planning Commission meetings, looking for Ed.
Ed's right.
Oh, there you are. You're behind. At the Planning Commission meetings, do they not know that once it passes at the Planning Commission meeting, it would be on the next City Council agenda?
Typically, the chairman will announce the meeting dates of first and second meeting of full council.
Right. So, I mean, they would know that generally it's going to be at the next council meeting. But again, that's subject to. I have sitting in my file right now, I think, 4 or 5 applications that went through the Planning Commission that council has asked for either additional information or the applicant has withdrawn, waiting to give us further information. And I get calls all the time, emails, when is that going to be on the agenda? And I have to keep telling them, we'll let you know when that time occurs. If we're wanting to notify them before the first reading, we'd almost have to let them know right after the Planning Commission meeting if we wanted to give them that 13 days. Well, actually, it would have to be 12 days. And again, I wouldn't know for sure until about 5 to 6 days ahead of time whether it's going to be on first reading. And again, you're always saying, do you want us to post it for first reading, then go out there and repost it again for second reading? We just know that 20 days for in advance of the second reading has not worked.
How many days does it have to be posted for the Planning Commission?
20 days.
20 days before the second reading?
No, before the Planning Commission, there's only one reading.
That's right. Okay.
But we know that when they come in, they pay their application fee, they give us all the information. It will be on this date, that unless the applicant withdraws it for some reason prior to that time.
So the property is actually posted 20 days before the Planning Commission meeting, and then at the Planning Commission meeting, it is usually announced that this will go before council, and they give the date for first reading and the date, the possible date for second reading. And so they've got all of that time if they're at the Planning Commission meeting. And if they're not at the Planning Commission meeting and didn't see the first sign, I guess when they meet, when the Planning Commission meets on that Tuesday, there's not 14 days left, is there, to post for our meeting?
But wouldn't if it was 13 days, that would get, it would already have passed first reading. Well, it wouldn't. You understand what I'm saying? In other words, it would, first reading, we don't post for first reading, we post for second reading. It would already have passed first reading, which we normally would have discussions on it. Mm-hmm. If it's 13 days, it would be posted. The people know that at least that time that it's passed, so they better get ready to get here for the public discussion. I think 13 days is the number, because we know we got 13 days between our meetings.
Yeah, and the only reason we had suggested 7 is when we had, like, the Central Park and Whiskey Road. It came to you for first reading, you approved it, but wanted further information. It's still out there somewhere. You know, they have never responded. Mm-hmm. We have the one that's off Inglewood. We asked for some further information on that.
But, you know, on the controversial things, though, I've not seen one that we didn't have discussion on the first reading. I mean, seriously, if it's something that people want to talk about, we have never, since I've been on here, not listened to what people want to say first, second, third. It doesn't matter. So, in my mind, what we're trying to do, I think, is make it easier on the people.
Right.
Isn't that right? I mean, that's what all this is about.
Purpose.
So, it seems that we got a better chance at 13, but then we at least let them know that we're trying to get the information out. I think 13 is the number.
Does staff have a problem with 13?
We could try 13 and see how it works.
Well, let's try.
But again, we would have had, I could think of now 4 or 5 cases that we'd have posted it and there would not have been a public hearing. Because we won't know until we put the agenda together whether they'll bring us back the information requested.
But we would at least know, the city council would know, whether if something's controversial, people are, and they would know, if it did pass first reading, and it's posted that very next day, and they've got that 2-week, 13-day period to get their petitions in and all that stuff. Not 7 days. That's what the problem is. The people that call me were concerned about 7 days is not long enough for us to get all of our things together.
That's right.
Yeah, and we don't know if it'll be on the agenda until the Monday or Tuesday.
But the only distinction would be they would go through all their work, come here, I'm sorry it's not here, so get more petitions the next time, and we'll let you know, whatever.
But again, Jane's suggestion that sign also,
I agree,
show that it's subject to change
with
and
the number.
It could clarify.
And the Planning Commission chairman says that when he announces the dates. He always says these could be subject to change. You need to check on this.
Yeah. But in writing.
Okay.
But I could go with what Pat says.
Are we in agreement then with 13 days?
Yeah.
And also putting a statement on the on the sign itself?
Now we could modify the sign and put the fact that this is subject to change, call. Now, and again, the majority of the time, there's going to be a second reading, and there's no problem. It just, we like to give the information as much as possible. That's accurate.
I do think it's important for people to know the only reason why we're changing this is to try to make it easier on the citizens. The 20 days was not, the citizens are the ones that are coming and it's not on. So, but I think 13 days does give them enough time to get all their stuff together and come on.
Okay. All right. Very good. Okay. So, now, this is the second reading and public hearing of this ordinance. And if there's anyone in the audience that would like to speak on this issue, you certainly may do so. Okay, please come up, give us your name and where you live for the record, please.
Mr. Mayor and council members, good evening. My name is Linda Lane. I live at 96 Cherry Hills Drive. In September, we were here for a hearing regarding the issue in Hounds Lake, and I was instrumental in the petition that we presented to you, and I can speak from experience what is involved getting your neighbors involved and aware of what is going on. And surprising as it may seem, there may be signs posted, but yet a large percentage of the neighbors do not know what is going on. And in getting with neighbors, you go to a lot of the different houses and you would find people out of town. And you might go back to some houses 2-3 times before you could catch up with people. So if someone were out of town for a week, they would not have any clue what was going on. When they came back into town, it would all be over and done with. And, you know, from my experience, going door to door, people would ask me, where are you talking about? What is going on? You know, you're kidding. Okay, you know, and ask several questions. And it would actually involve about 15, 20 minutes at each house because people would want to know exactly what, you know, what does the developer intend to do, this sort of thing. So, quite frankly, time is of the essence. 7 days, you'd really be scrambling. And it's not fair to the community and the taxpayers to not have time to be prepared, get everyone aware and involved, and if they are against it, like the situation in our neighborhood, to be able to do something about it.
Yeah. Linda, don't you think 13 days is a better compromise here?
13 days is better than 7.
Okay.
Just as a point of clarification, didn't on the issue of the Hounds Lake situation, was that on the first reading?
Yes.
All right. So what we had was 20 days. There was really no notice given that it was going to go to second reading. So so the 20 days, if you know that something is going to be controversial, so that's the good part about having on first reading. If anybody shows up here, we always allow the people to speak. I've never seen one where we didn't. So in that particular case,
it never even got posted for the 7 days because y'all saw it on the 20. But what basically this would mean is you'd have the 20 days for the posting for the meeting of the Planning Commission. You'd have at least 7 days before it went to first reading, probably more like 10, and then you'd have another 13, so you'd have 40 days of notice in here to get before it would get to second reading.
Right.
So that, with the 20, that's if it moves smoothly. Mm-hmm. But the reason why this came up was that we had people coming for a meeting and it wasn't on the agenda, and then they got upset.
Sure.
So that's what we were trying to help the citizens.
But I can tell you from experience that with my neighbors, a lot of them would have preferred to show up for a meeting here and not have it be on the agenda than to have it slide through when they didn't have the opportunity to find out what was going on.
No, that's not what we
and,
right.
But in fact, like from my own experience, what I did the day of the meeting was I called down here and verified we were on the agenda and in fact had a copy of the agenda faxed to me. So, you know, what it amounts to is you can verify that it is on there.
Right.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you, Linda.
Thank you.
Is anyone else that would like to make any comments on this issue? If not, it's back to City Council for consideration. So we need a motion.
May I move? We've amended the motion. Is that correct? 13 days?
Yeah.
I think what I'm understanding your motion to be is you would want to change the language in Section 1 of the ordinance to read 13 days instead of 7 days.
Exactly.
Right. And then a comment, I think, about what Jane mentioned about the note on the...
And the notice on the posting that posting. To give the people that it may be, that the date
right.
may
subject
change.
To, yeah, subject to change. Please call and verify.
And if people come for the first reading, we still may be interested in listening to their questions and their information.
Okay.
That's what worries me.
Okay, is that your motion? Who made the motion?
I made the motion.
Okay, Pat. Who seconded it?
I seconded it.
Okay, that's good. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Item 5 is a second reading and public hearing of an ordinance to amend the insurance tax collection ordinance. Mr. LaDuke, please.
Yes, sir. It's an ordinance amending the business license ordinance provision for insurance companies and for brokers and non-admitted fire and casualty insurers. The Municipal Association, who does our collection, has asked that all of the cities within the state of South Carolina would go ahead and amend their business license ordinance for insurance, so that would have the exact wording as the legislation has passed at the state level. They would continue with the 2% of gross premiums billing, but there is some language changes in here concerning agents and gross premiums and the fact that they would be going to a NAIC, NAICS code versus the SIC, SIC coding. This was approved on first reading at the October 25th meeting. This is second reading and public hearing consideration of an ordinance to amend our insurance tax collection program that we currently have with the Municipal Association.
Excuse me, what did you say about the NAICS?
We'd be asking the Municipal Association, they would like us to adopt the NAIC for insurance purposes.
We would ask them?
They're asking us. Right.
To adopt the standard code. Now, that's something we...
They are asking...
That was something we're studying right now.
No. Okay.
Straighten me out.
Let me say it all over again.
Straighten me out.
Okay. They are wanting to use the NAIC code for insurance purposes only.
Okay.
For all those with the insurance that they do the billing for us. That would be better defined and be more up to date. We are going to be looking at the NAIC code ourselves, and that will be coming back to you in the spring.
Okay. All right. This is the second reading in public hearing of this ordinance, and if there's anyone in the audience who would like to speak on this issue, you may do so. If not, it's back to City Council for consideration.
May I move for the adoption of the ordinance to amend the insurance tax collection ordinance?
Okay. Second. Anybody second?
I'll second.
Okay. Any discussion?
I have a question.
Okay.
On the last page where we've got the letter from the Municipal Association, it says it does not change the rate for insurance companies, but it all, but then in the first paragraph it says it alters the definition of gross premiums. Are we sure it doesn't change the rate?
The maximum they could charge is 2%. That's by state law.
And what is the alteration in the definition of gross premium? Do we know what that means?
I do not know.
As I understand it, the purpose is to make sure that they cover all gross premiums and that there's not a loophole in there that allows some gross premiums to escape. That's what I understand the purpose of the definition change to be.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other discussion, comments? If not, show of hands, please, all in favor. Passes unanimously.
Mr. Mayor, one comment on this, since that has to do with business taxes. We had, I know what we're doing, we're studying it, but I met with a couple of our state people on the House side, and I was wondering, should we be proactive from the standpoint of trying to change, have the law change that we could put a maximum on those companies that we heard from here that are having to pay for their total sales, even though the sales are outside the area, that we need to be proactive on that and try to work with the Municipal Association and try to work with our legislative delegation to say, we as a city feel like there needs to be some leeway given here that we can put a maximum on. And I, after hearing what we heard from our experts saying, no, you can't do anything about that. Well, I have a problem with that. I think if we as a city are proactive and go to the Municipal Association and say, would you support this type of legislation? I don't know how it would be worded, Mr. Mayor, because I don't want to hurt us, but I do think that if there is a way to word it from the standpoint that there would be a maximum charge of X amount, and we had the $1,500 at one time, didn't we? And that was thrown out because it was not in the law. I think we need to be trying to be proactive and try to figure out how to solve this, because I think we're not going to help the city at all when you got good companies that are located here writing huge checks and saying, wait a minute, half of my business is in Las Vegas or in Seattle and whatever, I'm paying a gross check here. I think there's a way, if we could get the Municipal Association to back us on this, that the legislature would go along with it. So I don't know how we do it, Mr. Mayor. I would be glad to try to work with a committee or some sort to try to see what we can do on this to see if we can foster moving this thing forward. And I understand that there's, you know, the Municipal Association has reasons they don't want to change anything, but I think it's upon us that when we hear people that are our taxpayers and they're saying, you know, I just got a bill for $19,000 and you know, last year it was $1,500, and you know, if I had to do that, I would certainly move two blocks away and not pay that tax. How many more businesses are we missing because they won't come in? And I think we're putting our heads in the sand if we don't recognize that. And I'd like to see us try to do something, and I'll be glad to maybe get our attorneys to try to figure out how we could write it and just make a suggestion to the Municipal Association and say, guys, we think we'd like to see at least give the cities a leeway to put a maximum on it.
Okay. Gary, would you like to make any comment? This is off the subject of our agenda, well, I'd like to stick to our agenda as much as we can, certainly. Maybe this is something we need to talk about in a work session. Because I mean, I agree with you, but I think this is something we could talk about for an hour or so if we're not careful. It's state law, what we're abiding by right now, the state law. So we're talking about changing the state law. Mm-hmm. And certainly we can try our best to do that if collectively we think that's the right thing to do. But maybe that ought to be on a work session.
I would like to see us look at it from the work session. I'll try to get some data on it.
Okay.
That's some way to do it.
All right. Okay.
Is the work session December too late?
No.
Are we going to have information? Because you said they were going to do some sort of research for us about business license fees.
Right.
Some point in time.
Yeah, they said it would take about 6 months to take all the numbers we had and recalculate them based on the new code, and that it would be done probably in March.
Well, maybe it'd be good to have a December meeting then to kind of see what maybe some things that need to be addressed that maybe we're not thinking of.
Okay, so you're talking about changes you'd like to see at the state level, not just with the city.
I think.
Well, we were told that the city couldn't, was just hamstrung in many cases, right, because
right.
of state law.
That's right.
And that's what Pat's talking about. So let's see what we can do.
I don't think there's a snowball's chance that this, any of this is going to happen unless the city takes the lead and tries to say, guys, go to the municipal association and say, maybe we need to, can you think of something we can work and work with our legislative delegation, but let us be proactive about how we think we could try to change it. And I'm not talking about throwing everything out. I'm just talking about trying to put a maximum on it to where we can try to get companies that want to locate in the city of Aiken, or all cities for that matter. I don't think this is just, I don't think this is just related to the city of Aiken. I think we got two excellent companies here that are paying huge numbers on things that they don't, that are produced outside the area. I think we need to try to look at it. But I think a work session would be fine.
Well, Pat, if you have talked with delegation members and they are in favor of this, why can't they pre-file something?
I didn't meet with all of our delegation. What I met with is certain people on it saying, what, how does it work? And the information I got was that it's going to be very difficult to get anything changed if the municipal association doesn't. So I think the way to work on it is have the cities work through the municipal association, say, is there a way that there's some compromise here to where we can work together to present something? I want to make sure what we change, and it may not be doable, Beverly. It just may not be doable from the standpoint of changing something in the whole state. All I'm saying is we heard all this discussion about business taxes, and I'm afraid that the one issue that came up that I didn't think that needed some rectification was this thing about the $39,000 bill that one of our, and a $19,000 bill that's all.
But on the other hand, the municipal association is going exactly the opposite way with this change.
A work session. I didn't mean to. It was associated with this, and I think we need to at least try to look at it.
Well, Pat, I think your thought is very good, but it would take a lot of the cities getting together, not just one city, obviously, but we could always be the starting member if that's what we want to do. But there are other things, too. We need to make sure our businesses understand the policy, when they have to pay taxes, how much they do, if they're paying to other municipalities, they don't have to also pay Aiken. I think that was one of the problems with the example you mentioned, that I think it was found out that this business was paying twice in some cases, yes, if I recall.
But only if the municipality has a sales tax.
Well, that's exactly right. Yeah. But can we schedule that for the December work session? Okay. Where are we?
Tattoos.
Item six. The second reading public hearing of an ordinance to amend the zoning ordinance regarding tattoo facilities.
Yes. And ordinance amending the zoning ordinance regarding tattoo facilities, the name or the title of it. You had asked for a lot of information concerning tattoos, and as far as where they we would allow them to be done, not particular information concerning yourself or anything, but we have given you a map here showing possible locations based on the ordinance you have in front of you, where tattoo facilities could be located. If you look at that map, anything that's in the dark gray area, anything in the gray area are industrial or light industrial zones. Anything that's in the dark gray is industrial. Anything that's in light gray is light industrial. Those areas that are enclosed by solid dark purple lines are areas that would be able to have a tattoo facility. The ones that are surrounded by dashed area would depend on where the front door of the business would be at, because everything is measured to the front door of the location. So if some of these were subdivided, the properties, then the front door could be over 1,000 feet away from that school or other area. Another thought that you need to keep in mind is, even if we did have this in place, this would be a special exception that they would need to get approval through the BZA for this type of zoning. So you have in front of you the information you wanted. I also attached the ordinance that North Augusta had. We feel that it's going to It's important that City of Aiken passes an ordinance. I know that there have been some agencies that feel that if you do not have a zone, therefore they cannot come into that area. Everything that we have received, everything we looked at, information we got from the Municipal Association says, if you don't have a zone, then you are basically saying you can't come in, and it gives them the ability to sue that particular agency to find out where they could be located. This is the second reading of this ordinance. We had the first reading back in July, and it's a public hearing concerning tattoo facilities.
Okay, thank you, sir. This is second reading public hearing of this ordinance, so if anyone would like to speak on this issue in the audience, you may do so. Okay.
I want to say there's an error on the map.
Okay, come up here and say it, would you, Henry? Please. Your name and address, please.
Henry Krippner, 144 Crane Court. I just want to say that it looks like there's an error on the map. It looks like Orangeburg Street is a street over next to Buford. Buford, Orangeburg?
Marlboro is left out. Based on the map that I have here, there's an error.
That's all I have to say.
So next to Marion is Marlboro Street.
Thank you, Henry.
Next to Marion, you have Williamsburg, and then Marlboro, and then Orangeburg.
I believe that Marion should be one street to the west, and
Marion.
Where Marion Street is really Williamsburg. Orangeburg is really Marlboro, and Orangeburg should be one block to the east.
Right. The first block over, right behind the A, is Marlboro. I'm sorry, it's Orangeburg.
Okay.
Orangeburg doesn't go north of Barnwell then? Does.
Say that again, Roger. Marion should be what?
Williamsburg. And Orangeburg should be Marlboro. And Orangeburg is really one block further east. Orangeburg is between Buford and Marlboro.
Mm-hmm. And it's south of Barnwell then, right?
What is south of Barnwell?
Orangeburg. I mean, there's nothing up north of Barnwell that is Orangeburg Street, or is there?
Orangeburg goes all the way to Abbeville.
Okay.
I
see. Yeah.
It does
stop. Thank you.
As you can see from the map, there are several locations that would definitely allow a tattoo facility. In fact, one of the locations would be on Colleton Avenue at Marlboro Street.
Is it back? It's not back to us yet. Are you still taking comments, Mr. Mayor, from the audience?
Yes. Is there anyone else that would like to speak? If not, it's back to City Council for consideration. Thank you, Reverend.
A large area, just again in relationship to what we're looking at on York Street, right across from where Councilmember Sprawls has his automotive shop. All of that could be a tattoo facility.
Across the street.
Across the street from you.
Are we ever thinking of limiting it to industrial? That's one question.
Well, certainly we could. Yeah.
It just looks like, look at Schofield School, and then one block away, that whole block could be, right? This sure doesn't go along with that master plan we've been working on, does it?
It doesn't.
Not a bit.
I've got the old master plan that I've looked at, and then I've got these tattoo parlors. And what concerns me is we're working so hard to make sure that our city looks like the all-American city that we want it to look. But if you look at this tattoo parlor possible sites, there's a high concentration in one area of our community. And that's not good. When I look at North Augusta, and I talk to North Augusta City Council members, they have the provision in their ordinance where they limited it to thoroughfare commercial, only on major thoroughfares. And why do we have to endanger neighborhoods in placing these tattoo parlors?
We don't. Okay. We can set those. Okay. We can set those restrictions. Gary will agree to that. I talked with Danny Crow today, the municipal attorney, mm-hmm. and he says that's what we can do. You know, if you read the information here in that latest bulletin, mm-hmm. I don't know if y'all read that or not, but it starts off by saying the wording is such that it appears that we don't have to determine. And then as you read more into it, it says, well, probably you should. And I questioned that today of Danny. I said, boy, you know, when I read the first part, it sounded good. And then I read the last part, and it leaves you hanging. But there's nothing to say we have to do this tonight. If there are any questions, we want to think about it a little bit more. This is not going to be settled, I understand, until DHEC, until the legislature comes back.
It won't be until the first of the year.
In January. So if we need to take some more time to think about it and look at areas or think about more restrictions, we can put restrictions on it. Just distances and that kind of thing, even more so than we have now. That's my understanding, Gary.
Mr. Mayor, I do think we need to consider what we're doing when we're looking at these industrial sites is that we're pretty much hiding them out of plain sight of possible being able to go in and making sure that they're following regulations. I don't know where I would vote to put them, but I certainly think that that this looks like a very bad place to put them. Even though you say 1,000 feet from a school or a church, you know, it doesn't say that we have to put them right in the middle of our neighborhoods like this. We have homes over here, and you have a community who's trying to upgrade itself. Who cares about what comes in, such that we've done the master plan with a lot of input from people who live in the area and people who own property in the area. And I don't know that they necessarily agree that we should just, simply because it's light industrial, put just about anything there. I don't know how Don, how do you feel about the prospect of having something across the street from you?
I'm trying to determine if that's light industrial or industrial, but I'd like to just go with the industrial.
What is the proposal? I thought it was just industrial, not light industrial and industrial. Is it just industrial we're talking about?
Not here.
Both, I think.
Why does it have to be light industrial?
It doesn't have to be. You could go ahead and restrict it in any ways you want.
The current wording of the ordinance is in industrial district only.
Okay, so that's only in the blocked areas.
Correct.
Right.
I guess another question would be, how difficult would it be to get some of these areas rezoned such that they're not industrial, especially those that are right in the middle of the neighborhoods? I look at the area between Williamsburg Street and I guess that's supposed to be Marion,
mm-hmm.
and going all the way down to Collington Avenue. Why is it we can't rezone some of this so that it's not industrial? Of course, we want to do that with the owner's permission, but why is it?
We've already been there with the comprehensive plan. Now we got the one thing that is industrial. Half of that property on Colleton is part of its light industrial. The other half is industrial. Is that correct?
No, on Colleton.
Well, that's why I'm just looking. I didn't know. I thought it was all light industrial, but
it's light industrial, but it's got a solid purple line.
No, what I'm saying is that part of that block is industrial. Is that correct? Right on.
Everything on Colleton Avenue is the light gray is light industrial, and the dark gray is industrial property.
It's light industrial, but it's got a dark purple line around it, which means it's a possible site.
Mr. Mayor, I've looked at this map, our master plan. I've looked at this, these possible sites. I've tried to match all this, and it's been pretty tough trying to, the amount of time we've had to try to match all of this. I'm not prepared personally to say that I can agree on anything tonight personally. I'd like to, for us to have a session just to address this, because I think this is pretty serious for me personally in terms of ensuring that we have the proper locations for these sites. And,
absolutely. And, of course, the other option is not to do anything and see what happens. See,
Roger,
see if anybody does come in that wants to even start the tattoo parlor.
I know it sounds counterintuitive because somehow we do want to put them off somewhere way out in the dark. But, in fact, it seems to me that the idea of using main thoroughfares, and I think we had discussed the fact that the county would allow that, for instance, along Whiskey Road in a non-incorporated area.
Have they made a decision?
I had a question. I thought the county said that they're going to go along. They're not going to do it at all.
I did.
To
my knowledge, they did not pass the ordinance.
They now back away.
I think I read
this.
This
is right here. What?
I thought I read that somewhere that the
county.
North
Augusta.
This North Augusta.
Yes. Yeah.
Council Administrator for the form of government for Aiken County.
But in fact, I really, and we have this thing about tattoos, and I don't have any, but I sure know a lot of proud Marines who do, and a lot of other people. So I just think we're cringing about something that we don't need to cringe about.
I think we really ought to put them in committee. I'm perfectly willing to say that they ought to go in commercial areas on main thoroughfares.
Shane, I don't want to hire a vehicle.
Well, I think it sounds like to me that we need at least to talk about this at a work session before we move on. So why don't we continue it? Get a motion here and a second to continue this item.
So moved.
Okay. Any other discussion before we vote? Okay. On continuation, all approve to continue this item. Okay.
Okay. Just for direction for staff, you want this on a work session item?
Yes.
Yep. Before council meeting or whatever.
Okay. We're probably in January then for that one.
And if we could find out what the county ordinance is by that time.
You know what I'd like, Roger?
You've actually got a copy of the county ordinance, the proposed county ordinance is in your package.
Yes.
But it never came out of committee.
It never
came out of committee. It was never passed up to be considered by the Planning Commission, or it was never voted on by the Planning Commission.
Mr. Mayor, how difficult would it be to notify the residents in these areas that this is what we're looking at, such that we could do a public hearing with them on this issue?
Okay, no one's going to want it, right? Everybody will come in saying we don't want it in a neighborhood, right? I mean, we know what a public hearing would be, and that's fine with me to have public hearings, but we know before we even go into a public hearing what
well,
the sentiment is.
Well, I hope that's the case.
So we don't want to do that anyway. I mean, we don't want to do that to start with. I'm inclined to think, after talking with Danny Crow, and I don't know whether Gary's got any other more definitive thoughts on the issue, is to not do anything on it, and let's see what happens. We can always come back and decide what we want to do at a later date. If we may not even have anybody that wants to put one in that city, so why even do anything? But that's just a thought. That may not be well thought out.
Well, may I ask outright that if this should come back to us in the future and is still in industrial, that prior to the meeting that all the residents in these areas be notified as to the time and place of our meeting on this issue, if it's going to come back saying this.
Sure.
Okay?
Sure.
That way, I mean, I won't leave it to chance. I'll just know that if you're going to do this, then we're going to discuss it again, that it will go to the community or the people at least who live in these areas.
Okay, well, we're going to discuss it in work session next step.
Right.
Okay. Go ahead.
If I may, Mr. Mayor, what I'd like to suggest as part of the work session, I'd like to have an executive session discussion to talk about the question that you're asking.
Okay.
And whether there's a good reason to pass an ordinance or not pass an ordinance.
Okay. All right.
And barely, just so I'm clear on this, you're not asking that we try to notify all the citizens for the work session. That would be if we have a second reading.
If we have, if this is scheduled for second reading again after our work session,
right,
and it still remains the same, that these people be notified,
right,
that we're having this second reading of public, yeah, hearing.
But out of the work session, we may come up with some other thoughts,
right,
as to how and where to put it. And so it's no sense inviting the public. I mean, all our meetings are open,
right,
except a executive session, which we have very seldomly. But just to go out and invite everybody to the work session. The work session ought to be for us to be able to talk about things and get our thoughts together and decide what we want to do.
Okay. But it's just like
what we want to take to the public.
From Hounds Lake, a lot of people don't realize they live near an industrial zone, even though they know this is one of the agenda items. They don't really think it applies to them, and so they're not here.
Right, right. Well, I don't argue with you. I agree with you, but I think a work session is where we get our thoughts together as to the path forward that we want to take out to the public, and then we can. Okay, going on to new business. Item one is the first reading of an ordinance to establish new residential garbage service. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, the title, which I'll read, is an ordinance establishing new charges for residential garbage service. Council back in January asked that the city review possible changes to our solid waste system that included our garbage and our yard trash. One of the things you asked at that time then was also to start up a pilot program for roll carts. We took several different neighborhoods within the city, anywhere from a Woodside to Carlson Park to others in between. There was over 1,700 residents in those areas, and of those we handed out 1,500 roll carts. We then surveyed all of those individuals, not only that had roll carts, but those that did not have roll carts, to find out, did they want to continue with this type of service, or did they want to stay with the backyard service? Of the cards that we sent out, we received back 60% of those, 958 total. 86% of those asked those that participated in the roll cart program, and of those that we got back, 14% had backyard service. Of those that responded, 9% said that they wanted to keep the backyard service, and the rest wanted to keep roll cart service. There was a split, but the majority of them said that they wanted to have 90-gallon roll carts. So the vast majority wanted to continue with this type of service. Based on that, we looked at, do you want to have those 9% that want to have the backyard service, some type of service where they could continue working with us where we collect in the backyard. We went out to the airport and put our roll carts approximately every 100 feet apart and about 50 feet off of a line to see how long it would take to go from point to point to pick these roll carts up to get a feeling on what the additional price should be. Based on that, we determined that an additional fee of about $5 a month would cover our cost to go continue the backyard with a roll cart. Now, again, what that's saying is we'd have a gentleman or a lady, one of our employees, go from the truck to the backyard, get the roll cart, bring it to the street. Once they empty it, they'd bring it back to the backyard again. We are recommending we stay at the $12.50 per month. We did give you, one of the questions you had was, what was the actual cost to provide the service that we currently have? We looked at our actual cost from 2003 and 2004 and determined that our actual cost to have recycling, yard waste collection, and backyard service was $15.84. We then gave you also some comparisons of what were the actual costs from other cities. North Augusta, for the same type service, with curbside everywhere within the community, charged $15.80. Tyler Sanitation, for no recycling or yard waste, charges $13.50. Ridgeway Sanitation in the county charges $13.50. Augusta charges $16.25. Myrtle Beach $16.50. Conway $18. And Rock Hill between $16.47 and $24.70, depending on if you get one or two cards. The Myrtle Beach, Conway, and Rock Hill are the actual cost as to what they have to turn into DHEC, as we do for our actual cost provide service. So those are some of the fees. For individuals that are elderly or cannot physically bring the container to the street, we feel that we should continue to provide this backyard service for those that meet that category. That is typically what other cities have also provided. We would not be asking for them to bring us a doctor's excuse or anything, but if they felt that they were not able to do this, that would be adequate. We also said that if somebody wanted to have an additional cart, which some people have already told us they would, we charge them $65 extra a year for that cart and for the service to dump it and to deposit the landfill. And one last item is we got involved with the fact that when we got into Crosland Park, there were a number of residents, when I said number, we're talking probably 20 to 30 residents, that at some point in time were not taking back their roll carts or the recycling bins. And we felt that within a certain period of time, we talked about 24 hours, we talked about possibly 48 hours, that all of those things should be returned to the house. If they were not, we would charge a service fee to ride around those areas and return it for them, and that would be added onto their water bill. We would, as we always have, give them a warning or two on that to let them know that we have returned your bin, we have returned your roll cart. However, if this happens again in the future, you would be charged an additional $5 for this service. So before you tonight is the first reading of an ordinance to establish a new roll cart service in the city, and upon your consideration, a second reading and public hearing would be held.
Okay, thank you, sir. I know there's probably some discussion on this. Could we have a motion and a second, though, to get it to the point where we can discuss it?
I'll move it.
I'll second it.
Okay. Now, any discussion?
Mr. Mayor, I have some comments. Okay. And first, I'd like to say that I have not heard from anybody much in my community about the roll carts, because I know that not many of them have roll carts. I do have one that was delivered to me when the program started. And I also think that I remember when we first initiated the program that a lot of the neighborhoods that were already in the city that got roll carts got them because they were neighborhoods that were already doing, where the residents were already putting out their garbage anyway. Some, in addition to those we put in the new residents, those in new neighborhoods, got roll carts. But when you have been in the city for 30 years and you're spoiled by backyard pickup, it becomes cumbersome to go to the new system. And I'm talking to you from a personal point of view, and I think y'all know that I'm not responsible for garbage in my house. But every now and then, I have to take it out and I have to pull it back in. And it's a bit much for me, because I'm not used to it. And the few times I go out there, it's been a problem for me. We don't even know where to keep it, whether to put it next to the house, away from the house is too far, especially when the weather's bad. And so I'm having some second thoughts about putting this on everybody, just from a personal standpoint. And I recognize all the economic advantages to the city for doing it this way, but people that have been here for as long as I've been here and have lived in the city as long as I've lived in the city can remember when we went from twice a week to once a week, from going now from backyard to curbside. And I think it's those few of us that might be having a hard time with this. And I'm able. I just am slow to change in this matter, because garbage to me is such a dirty thing anyway, and to have to put it in the can and then roll it out and roll the can back sometimes is just not something I want to do. So it isn't anything other than that. I just...
Mr. Mayor, I've been here all my life too, and I roll mine out. You know what we're talking about here is $1.15 a week if you want to keep this service. Isn't that right? You got $5, isn't it $5 a month, right? 52 weeks, $1.15 to have someone come in and roll it out for you. And I'm telling you, and if you're not able to do it, if you're physically unable to do it, we're not going to charge you for it. If you're older and can't do it, we're not going to charge you for it. We're talking about $1.15 a week. And I think that's where it works out.
It does, but remember now, we're talking about people who already pay taxes, who already feel that ought to count for something. And
I agree with that, but I don't want the 90. If the 90% they're going to do it, are rolling it out now. I mean, I'm rolling mine out, and if I want to pay the $1.15, I'll pay it and raise my hand. I'll pay it. What this is about is you pay what we need to do. Either we raise it for everybody, or everybody's got to do this, and we still get the alternatives. You pay for what you get.
But Beverly made a point at the beginning, Pat, when she talked about the fact that the areas where they've been tried out have not been in downtown and Old Aiken neighborhoods for the most part. They have not been. And I have to mention this letter that I've got today on the facts that I just wanted you to see from Dorothy Muff Herbrook on Colleton, when she talks about, you know, she just says that if we're working so hard to enhance the looks of our streets, why do we want to insist that the garbage be dragged out to the road? But I mean, her point is that I can see that 90% of the people in the neighborhoods that were trial neighborhoods maybe didn't mind having that out on the road. And the more that I read about, I was never for roll carts in the beginning, but the more I read about how dangerous it is to pick garbage out of cans and things like that, I know that. And I know I have trouble packing mine in a can to where I feel like somebody won't be hurt or messed up in any way by pulling stuff out. So I can see that the roll cart could be a real boon there. But I just think that since we're saving all this money by not picking up solid waste, and since it's going to be cumbersome to figure out, I mean, who's old, who's disabled, who's what, who's not, I just think we could give it a try, just not insisting that it be put out on the street.
Jane, one question. We're saving all this money by not picking up solid waste.
By not picking up sofas, chairs, buildings emptied out like we used to be, mattresses, all that. And people are paying extra for that. And that's been a comment I've gotten too. Well, why are we having to pay extra for this? And I said, well, because it wasn't fair for everyone to have to pay for the few people who really abused that system. And the fact that it was very dangerous items were being placed upon the curb, which we didn't want to be there for children to get, or anybody to get hurt with. But that's the other thing. But I just, I've had a lot of calls about backyard pickup. I don't know if you, I mean, I think that's what Beverly's talking about too. And I just wondered if we could try it. Certainly $5 is not unreasonable. But on the other hand, figuring out who's going to pay it and who isn't is going to be a pain in the neck, too.
But if the people want to keep them, and if they don't want it out there, because you're right, if your majority of neighbors want to pay that $5, more power to them. I mean, all the neighborhoods in my in the city of Aiken are important. And I lived in Old Aiken for 1948 and then moved to a new neighborhood, but you know, as far as whether it was on Brandy Road and rolled it out and want to, if still want to keep it in the backyard and I want to pay my $5 a month, I want to keep it that way, that's fine. I guess this is a question of fairness with me. I mean, think about it. We're trying to be efficient. We're trying not to raise the fees and keep it where it is. We already know that the cost of it is $15.84 if we went straight across the board. So in my mind, it's just a matter of the old way is you pay for what you get. And if you want to keep this service, fine. If you don't, then roll it out just like everybody else. Dick, you got any comments about how it works in your area?
It works fine, of course. We have absolutely no problem. And I'm accustomed to it from other places as well.
Let me add something, too. I have a roll cart as well, and I have no problem with it. I don't have some of the problems that Beverly does, I guess.
I don't have
garbage.
Any problems. I don't have any
but,
serious problems.
Let's get back to the base. Let's get back to the basics here as to why we even got into this. It's good business, of course, to be able to pay for your service. And we haven't been doing that. We've been supplementing our pickups from the general fund all these years. And because we've grown, because we've had revenue coming in, we've been able to do that. But let's look at what's happened to us over the last couple of years. We've lost about $900,000 to our budget this year. Two pieces caused that, and there are things that we all like. One of them is a reduction in car taxes that we've been seeing incrementally each year. And the other is communication fee on your long distance. If you look at your long distance bill, we used to have 5% come into the city. Now you'll probably say 0.75. Hopefully it's going to be raised up to at least 1 because we don't lose any more money. But what you'll see now, I think, is 0.75. That money is not coming to the city anymore. We don't have that money now to supplement other things with. You and I should be getting that money back. And that's much more than $1.25 extra a week if you had to pay for your garbage pickup. So to me, that's important. We need to enforce. If we go to the roll cart system, we need to enforce it. People leave it out there over the time period. They need to be talked about, too, about it. Warning first and then fined after that. So there are reasons why we even got back on this thing. I dare say, had we not had this great reduction in our revenue, we might not be talking about it. We might not be talking about it. But we've been fortunate. We haven't had any city millage increases in 16 years. And the alternative, of course, would be to raise property taxes, which we don't want to do, if we maintain basically the same services. We have the best services anywhere around. I haven't found anywhere yet that has the services that we have. We are spoiled. I think we've been spoiled for all these years. And nobody likes change. But there are changes going on, these unfunded, so to speak, mandates that we're getting that are taking money out of our revenue. So we've got to look at other ways to supplement that money into our budget. So, and this is this is one of them. And, of course, it's good because we are getting closer to paying for the services that we would provide. So I think those points I make, at least they're important to me, and I think they help me to make my decisions, knowing what I think is the whole story as to why we even are here, in my opinion. And when you think in terms of losing $900,000 out of your city budget, then that's quite a lot of money.
Mr. Mayor, I am really understanding what you're saying, and I've heard that, you know, since the car tax thing was voted in by the legislature and the loss of revenue from the other source. Mm-hmm. But I guess I'm thinking about what a hard time I had explaining to a church member that She had just had to deal with the issue of the solid waste because she was renovating a room and put some things out that shouldn't have been out and got this notice about having to pay this exorbitant fee. We just got that kind of through the system, and people are still having some minor difficulties with that issue. And then we go back to doing another thing with garbage. I couldn't really explain to her what was going on so that she could understand. I mean, I understand in city council language what to tell her, but she wasn't understanding me when I put it in my plain English. But I do want you to understand that I think this is something that we have talked about a long time, and I understand the revenue part of it. I even asked Roger a year or so ago, why don't we just go ahead and hit him with what it cost all at once so we won't have to do this incremental change every year, because every year I get the same grief from people about going up on the garbage rate. And so I understood that it was because some people would have a hard time absorbing the high rate immediately. But now we're going to telling people who've been doing something for a long period of time that you've got to change that because it works good in another part of the city where we tried it. And I'm asking you to think about what that would mean to people who've been doing it that way for a long time. We're going to give them the option of paying the extra money to have it in the backyard. But then what does that do to staff when they have to decide, where do I pick this up from? Do I go front, back, side, or where? And I just, I have some personal concerns about it, and I know we don't bring personal things in here, but I said that at the outset, that it was just me. No one had called me up and raised Sam about it. I just had some thoughts about what this was going to do to people who'd been here as long as I had. So, and sir, I wanted to mention that.
We're talking about $15.84, an increase from $12.50 to $15.84, which is about a $40 a year increase in the garbage rate, with $15.84 difference in $12.50 and $15.84. In addition to that, we're talking about $5 on top of $15.84.
No, I think $12.50 stays the same, doesn't it? We're not talking about raising the basic rate, are we?
The $12.50 stays the same, $12.50, if you bring it to the curb.
Yeah, we're not raising the basic rate to $15.84, are we, Roger? It stays at $12.50. We're only talking about if you want to get it picked up in your back.
$12.50, $15.84
That's what the cost of it is.
It actually costs us right now to pick up garbage.
So there will be no need for an incremental increase next budget time?
We're going to be looking at it, but my feeling is that we would stay at $12.50 until we could determine what our actual costs are, and then you could, but that's going to take several months. In other words, I don't want to come to you after implementing this because with the trash service change, with this change, obviously that's making a difference on our overtime and some of our other manpower. Our recommendation to you is to stay at $12.50, but to incrementally go citywide with the roll cart program. There is one neighborhood with 550 residents in your district, Crossland Park, that has been doing the roll cart program, which is an established neighborhood. They seem to enjoy it more than anybody else because it's gotten rid of a lot of their trash problems that they were experiencing prior to this time. So that is a neighborhood that has been here for a long time, is not a new neighborhood, that did have a lot of backyard collection at the time we implemented it.
When I look at the fee comparison to us based on other locations you've given us, and the interesting backdrop pickup, the fact that we're talking about a $3.34 difference per month, which is $40 a year, and looking at backyard pickup, I'm the last one to recommend a fee increase, but is that what you're considering, Roger? Is that a consideration to continue the backyard pickup?
Oh, yeah.
Only if they request it, and they'll pay for it. If you don't, if you want to, you know, do more for yourself and keep your taxes down and keep your fees down, you're going to roll it out and pay $12.50. If you don't want to do that, yeah, you're going to pay $5 more.
With the exception if they're unable.
If they're elderly and can't do it, or they're ill-informed or in distress or whatever, you know, they can't do it, then we're going to still keep it $12.50, and the rest of the citizens will eat that because that's what we do as good citizens. But if we don't want to roll it out, all you got to do is pay $1.15 a week, and you get it picked up. Mm-hmm. That's what this is all about. Mm-hmm.
The other reason for the roll card service that we have discussed, and we have not really talked about an awful lot here,
efficiency,
is the fact by us changing with our yard waste program, and not picking up the plastics and some of the metals and other things. Like, I had a call the other day, actually it was a letter from an individual that had an edger that they threw out. Well, again, we can pick up the edger, but it's not something that the landfill will allow with yard waste. Well, if he had a roll cart, he could have put it in the roll cart, and we would have picked it up with the roll cart. The roll cart will be able to allow citizens to throw away things that are of a non-yard waste items that they have no other means to get rid of other than putting it in the roll cart. And so that allows them to be a little bit more efficient with that service also.
I had a question about recycling. Now, that doesn't pay for itself, does it? Or does it?
I mean, it's all rolled into that $12.50 that we're currently paying. We have to pay an extra $1.06 a month, I believe is what it came up to be, to get rid of the recycling material over and above what we pay for the materials that we collect. So we lose $1.06 a month per customer.
But if you didn't have that, that all would be going into the garbage would increase, right? Most of it. Where's it going to go?
Maybe go back in the garbage that we'd have to collect.
If I am to look at this, we're talking about $12.50 for the current services. You're saying that it actually costs us $15.84 to provide those services.
Correct.
So if it's costing us more to provide those services and we're charging a lesser rate, my question is, you know, do we bite the bullet now or get it later? Do we just go ahead and address $15.84 now? Because somewhere it's coming to us
but
at some point.
We had the discussion at Horizons that this was coming up. We're going to look at this, and one of the issues we're going to do is we got to do something about how we treat this. And we looked at it at that time. Roger said at that time we may have to experiment with the roll cars because we know it would be more efficient. We get four, don't we go from four to three people?
That's correct.
Four to three people. One full person can come off the truck. That's efficiency. You also are going to have another truck when this town keeps growing like it is. So that's efficiency. That's what we're talking about here. And it's also just a question of paying for what you get. In my mind, that's exactly what we should be doing. So, I'm not in favor of it going to $15.84 for everybody unless we reduce the millage. Because we've already said we're supplementing it. So if we go to $15.84, I want the millage to go down. And I think it's better for us to, my God, we talk about trying to get physically fit. Here we are talking about rolling a cart out. Everybody's running around the track trying to get in shape. Rolling a cart out and bringing it back in is not that big a deal to save $5, but also become more efficient.
Pat, you can't get your heart rate up pushing that roll cart to your driveway.
Well, I know. Well, push it around. Just push it around the driveway three or four times.
Any movement is good.
That's right. Now they're saying you don't have to necessarily have your heart rate up a certain point.
I mean, that is not exercise.
Run with it.
But Roger said it, and I was going to say it too. The roll cart, I've got a 90 gallon, and you can put a lot of stuff in a 90 gallon roll cart. And some of those things that might be considered solid waste, Jane, you put them in that roll cart.
Oh, that's
and,
motion,
and if you fill up your roll cart, you can still put a bag outside if you need to, or a box.
I want to vote up or down on this.
Yeah, can I make one last point? I don't want council to be misunderstood on this matter, that by us going to roll cart service and us going to the yard trash service, that we're paying $15.84 a month for right now. I don't believe that we're going to have the cost savings that's going to reduce it from $1,584 down to $1,250. We're probably going to be looking at some increases in the future. I'm just telling you that at this point in time, I don't want to talk about that because we don't know what those are going to be. I don't think it's going to have to go up to $1,584, but it's going to have to go up some amount in the future to cover all of our costs. But we could determine what those costs are later on once we have the operation working smoothly and we could better determine the exact cost of those operations.
Which will also have the efficiencies on the fees we're charging for the waste that we are charging for. So that ought to help, too.
Where does the money come from to buy the roll carts?
Right now, we'll just be taking that from the general fund reserves, and that's why I'm saying it would be over a 2 to 3 year period of time that we would implement it. I think they're running around $30 or so a piece, a little over $30, going up to maybe $35. $37, and we have about another 7,500 people to purchase those for. So we're talking the range of probably $250,000 to $300,000 for roll carts everywhere. We can't get them out to every house immediately. So what we're saying is, let's go ahead and every quarter we'll put out maybe 1,000 roll carts. Now we might be able to speed that up somewhat, but again, our funding would come from the reserve funds that we have.
Okay. Just briefly, Mr. Mayor, I heard during the discussion that there was some desire to allow reduced price service to backyard pickup for elderly and those who were not able to roll the carts out. The current ordinance does not say that. And so if that's council's desire, you would need to make that as a modification.
Well, we need to include
motion.
That.
Yes, sir.
The motion, I made the motion. I certainly would like to include that in the motion.
Okay. Beverly, you accept that?
I agree. What's going to you need to stipulate what's going to constitute elderly, because I just might be okay with that.
No, you're not.
Beverly, how old are you?
You're not there yet.
I do think you ought to indicate what's elderly and what's when you put it in your.
Well, it'll have to be defined, obviously, what we're talking about.
And I thought that we had decided long ago that Larry was going to do the sort of, because it's not going to be an age factor. There are some people who might be younger who are not able to manage it.
Why don't we just say those that are unable to manage? I mean, it would
be as determined by the Director of Public Works.
Exactly.
They'd be signing a piece of paper stating that they are not able to bring the garbage to the street. Again, I don't want to go into you need to sign affidavit from your doctor or anything. That they feel they're not able to do it because of their age or because of their physical conditions or there's no one within their household to do it.
I
really believe that most people are going to be wanting to do that, nothing else out of the pride.
Roger, another thing that I looked at was your injury list, and the fact that 33% of your injuries
are from picking up garbage.
Right, from garbage, our employees. You're talking about time off from work with these individuals. So how much can you continue with that many injuries occurring on employees as a result of backyard pickup?
Okay.
We're not going to lose any employees because of this program, are we?
We have to do it through attrition.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any other discussion?
Motion, made a second.
Okay.
Amended.
Well, we got Dick and Beverly. You made the motion.
I made the motion. I'm also amending the motion
My mistake. Okay. Show of hands, please, all in favor of approving this ordinance on first reading. Opposed? Okay.
Was that 7 or is that 6.5? Okay.
6-1. Passes 6-1.
No, 5-2.
5-2.
Beverly voted against.
Beverly, I'm sorry.
Beverly
my mistake.
Against. Okay.
5-2. Okay, second item, resolution for acceptance of deed of dedication for the detention pond near Two Notch Road and Price Avenue. Mr. LeDuc, please.
I'll read this by title. It's a resolution authorizing acceptance of a deed of a detention area, a portion of former tax parcel number 30-056.0-07-011, now a portion of 122-05-20-006 for storm drainage maintenance operation detention and related uses, together with an easement for ingress, egress, and regress over a portion of this tract for access purposes. The long and short of this is Peggy Fitch wants to give us her pond. And we have looked at it. It serves right now the Carolina Bay, several of the areas surrounding it. It in turn goes by gravity into the Woodland storm drain system. By doing this, we'll be able to even make some additional improvements in that area, especially in the Woodlands area. They've been very kind to maintain the pond for a long period of time. They're now getting ready to subdivide and sell part of their property, and they are ready to go ahead and give us this pond. And we're more than willing, based on past experiences, to accept a regional pond of this nature. So for your consideration, this is approval of acceptance of a deed of dedication for a detention pond owned by Dr. Margaret H. Fitch.
Okay, thank you, sir. Do we have a motion and second?
I move to accept this deed of dedication.
Second.
All right. Any discussion? If not, show hands, please. All in favor? Okay, passes unanimously. Item 3, approval of accommodation tax committee recommendations. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes, sir, Mr. Mayor. Every year we receive funding through our state accommodation funds. This is the money that our tourists pay when they go to a hotel, motel, or bed and breakfast. This year we received a total of $126,551.03. By the time we take out the eligible funding to assist with some other city projects, we are left with $113,757.32. The committee recommends that $5,000 of that would be left in reserve. I'm sorry, of the $102,000 that's left, they would recommend that $5,000 would be left for reserve, and that a total of $97,415.10 would remain for the projects. We have listed on the very back page all those projects, which everyone is funded 100%, except for three projects. One is the Playhouse and the Triple Crown Street Fair. They felt that of those two projects, there was not enough evidence that tourism was coming in for overnight stays to have it any higher than what they're recommending, which is 69% for the Triple Crown Fair and 50% for the Playhouse. If they could demonstrate in the future that more tourists are coming in, then they will take that under consideration later. The third area that they're not recommending 100% is at the Master Gardeners Horticultural History and High Society. It's a brand new event. They were requesting $13,190. The committee has recommended $5,489.26, which is at 42%. Again, because it was very hard to justify whether or not tourists would be staying at the hotels and motels during that time. The committee had given two different options. We just received information on Friday that the state review committee stated that $7,500 could be given to the Center for the Arts for operation funding. And so the recommendation as proposed in that chart is the one that is given to you tonight. So for your consideration, this is approval of the accommodation tax request as presented by the committee and shown on the tax request table.
Okay, thank you. Do we have a motion in a second?
Second, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. I wonder if there's anyone in the audience that would like to speak on the issue of the accommodation taxes. Okay. Okay. Any discussion?
Mr. Mayor.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I really wonder, why is this a 6-month schedule instead of 12 months? Have I missed something?
We wanted to get more on our fiscal year basis And in the past, it was very difficult trying to fund a full year that was on a calendar year basis. Okay. This will put us back on a fiscal year basis.
Okay.
And they'll be coming back together again this spring to look at those that would be in the fall.
I just had a question. I mean, there's specific things that you have to spend this on. It can't go for salaries and all that. Doesn't it have to be spent outside the area to get advertising to come in? What's the specific thing?
It has to be spent in an area 50 miles or further from the city of Aiken for any advertisement. We used to be able to use the money to advertise in Augusta, and they have now ruled that that no longer is the case either.
So but in other words,
Columbia, Florence, Rock Hill, Charlotte, Atlanta, Charleston.
The committee did go through and see that all of these were to be used according
to that
rule.
Yes, they did check the state committee beforehand. And that's why we were waiting on the one for the Center for the Arts, because they wanted to use it for operational money, which is outside the purview generally, but they felt enough tourists were coming in for overnight stays that could be justified.
Okay.
You mean, okay, if they're going to put up a billboard, it has to be more than 50 miles
away?
That
is correct.
Mm-hmm. So we couldn't put one out on the interstate to lure people into Aiken?
No, that is a new state law that...
Can't advertise in the Aiken Standard.
That came up around 2 to 3 years ago.
Okay, any other discussion? If not, show hands, please, all in favor. Okay, pass this in. Item 4 is approval of consulting firms for connecting roadway studies for Powderhouse and Whiskey Road. Mr. LeDuc, please.
Yes. On the 1 cent sales tax that was just approved on last Tuesday, one of those items was to create a roadway from Whiskey Road to Powderhouse, and then to create another road that would be parallel to Whiskey Road from this roadway that we just mentioned on up to Centennial. To get us moving in that direction, we have interviewed seven different consultants. The final three are listed here: Dave Wilburn, Wilbur Smith, SEPI Engineering Group. Our committee are asking that council approve those three in the order that's given. We will then negotiate with the top firm. If for some reason that would not negotiations would break down, then we'd go to the next firm. But this is the way the South Carolina Department of Transportation would like to go ahead and see the approval given. They were all good firms. We do have the different proposals that each one of them gave us, if anybody would like to see it. And we are recommending Dave Wilburn as the top firm. We would be paying 20% of the fee, and they would be paying 80%. We're anticipating right now that fee would be $75,000, so we'd be paying $15,000, and the arts would be paying $60,000. That would go ahead and locate where that road would go and allow us then to start hopefully acquiring the right-of-way using the 1 cent sales tax money.
Did the 1 cent include the study? Did it say study?
Did.
So we get reimbursed back on the 20?
If we would like to, we could. We were planning to try to move this forward even quicker than the 1 cent sales tax money would come in, since it was a small amount.
Okay.
I'd like to ask, what was the criteria for selecting the three out of the seven? You were a member of the three-person committee. What were some of the things you looked at? Obviously, experience, I guess, types of projects in the past.
Major factor was experience doing this kind of study, a location study, as opposed to designing a road. We checked references, the quality of the proposal, an indication that they could do the work in a timely fashion, a good grasp of or making a good presentation of the process they would use to do the study, those kinds of things.
Okay.
And also the staff that they would be using on these particular projects.
What do you mean by that?
In other words, what kind of experience did the staff members that they're projecting would work on these particular projects? They gave a resume of those individuals and qualifications as to what other work they have done previously, especially in South Carolina.
What's the timing on the studies, roughly? What are you looking for?
It should be done August 1st.
August 1st, next year.
Okay. Roger, just one other question. I know this, and this is important, but what about the connector from off Daugherty Road, about locating that and where that's going to be, and when are we going to get some briefing on that?
We thought we'd have it at this meeting. When we got the report back, which was about a 40-page report, we didn't have time to go through it in time for this, so we'll be looking at that the next meeting.
Okay.
Who did that study?
That was done by Roger Dyer, looked at the quadrant between on the north side, Pine Log Road, south side, Daugherty Road, east side, Whiskey Road, west side, Silver Bluff. So that one area of our city, we have a large report that we'll be coming back to you on.
My only question is, I have to say that I'd rather employ a South Carolina firm if we could. Mm-hmm. I really would. And there is one here, but it's not rated first, so I don't know why that is.
Ed, you want to answer that? If there's a particular reason why you picked Dave Wilburn over Wilbur Smith Associates?
Dave Wilburn does this kind of study. They do location studies for new roads. Wilbur Smith could do more. I'm sure he'd do a good job. Wilbur Smith does a lot of other things. Dave Wilburn, we were impressed by the personnel that he could do for the references for global.
Well, they still have to give you a proposal and a quote, all three, I assume, right?
Well, we'll start with Dave Wilburn and go through contract negotiation with him.
Okay.
If it doesn't work out, we'll
oh, okay.
So if you all have a preference on, say you want to do a South Carolina firm and put them first and put Dave Wilburn second, that's, again, we just need to have an order to go to the state with as to what our top firm is and our second and our third one for negotiation purposes.
Well, I think we've asked the staff to do that. Ed and now a traffic consultant that we've been using for several years now, and Bill Huggins, and I think we ought to accept their recommendation. I don't think we know enough. Obviously, I don't think we know enough to make any logical changes other than to say, gee, we'd like to have a South Carolina firm. That's my opinion.
Well, yeah, I don't know enough to make a decision on one of the firms either. That was just a question I had as to why we couldn't, if there was a definite reason in which you had. What would cause negotiations to fail? Price being too high? You have a notion of what it's going to run then?
Well, from here. Again, $75,000
bigger than they're using. At one time, we were looking at just doing one study that was the connector between Whiskey and Powder House. But as we went into this further, we decided that it would make a whole lot more sense to do both of them, the north-south and the east-west connector at the same time.
Okay. We need a motion and a second.
I so move, Mr. Mayor, that we accept the recommendation from the staff.
Okay.
I'll second.
Okay. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay, we added an item. Mr. Brody would like to speak to us concerning the cultural center relative to city involvement, I think, and financing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Wade?
And as Mr. Brody's coming up, let me give you a little background. Council did approve this past spring funding the African American Cultural Center, $75,000 a year. until we reach $360,000, and the Railroad Museum at $50,000 a year, both to come out of the accommodation tax funds. That is the funding that we currently have in this year's budget for both those projects. But also in passing that motion, you stated that it would be a matching funds. And that's what Mr. Brody is here for tonight.
And that accommodations funds that Roger's talking about is not what we just talked about. There are two accommodation funds. The accommodation tax that Roger's talking about is the 3 cents that comes directly to the city. This other that we've talked about goes through the state and then back to the city. So, just
thank you for adding this item to your agenda. As Roger mentioned, the Aiken Corporation is working with the committee on the depot and on the cultural center. And looking back at the resolution that you passed authorizing the funding for these two projects, it reads, with funds being matched. And I'm here this evening to request that we define matching funds to be 100% of cash and 90% of unpaid pledges. This would help us work through the process of going to the city staff and asking for funds if we got this procedure.
Wait, explain that to me a little bit. You say 100% cash, 90% pledges.
Right.
What? Explain it to me in sixth grade math.
All right. Say you pledged $100, okay?
Right. Okay.
And you pay $10 in cash.
Okay.
And you agree to pay $90 over the next 3 years.
Okay.
What I'm saying is the basis for city funding of this project, our recommendation is 100% of cash and 90% of unpaid pledges.
10% or 100%? I'm trying to do the math on you.
90% of unpaid pledges. Yes.
Let's cut to the chase.
Yes.
How much cash you got in hand right now in pledge? In
40-odd thousand.
43,000.
43,000. And we have about between 200 and 250 in pledges. You know, in the banking business, it's not unusual to use pledges as looking at a source of payment. We also use pledges in coming to final agreement with the city on the Performing Arts Center. And the history of pledges in Aiken has been very good. I think United Way typically runs in excess of 90%. The last time I looked at the Performing Arts Center, we were running better than 95%. And as I recall, on Aiken 2020, which was a $3.5 million campaign, came in about 92%, didn't it, Roger?
It was over 90%.
Right.
Let me add that what exists is companies that have agreed to three-year pledges, banks with pledges, credit union with pledges, and churches with pledges. Those things are existing in terms of commitments.
Based on what I know of those, and I think some of the organizations or what have you may not want to be public. They want to be anonymous, perhaps.
Some of them do, yes.
And I can understand that. I mean, based on what I know of who they are, I don't see a problem with what you're asking. We've just got to make sure, you know, with... It's accommodations tax, so it's not paid by our citizens, per se. It's paid by people coming in, staying in the hotels. So it's not a risk, so to speak, of coming out of our taxes. So we can forget about that. But I don't think there's a lot of risk here based on a past experience, as you've stated, and knowing a little bit about who has made those pledges.
So then we would have to provide more than $75,000 the first year?
No. That doesn't.
That's set in stone.
You've approved the maximum amount for both of the projects.
What it amounted to is when Wade asked for this money, I'll put it on me, because I asked for what kind of guarantees you have for this money. And he was able to come up with so much in cash, at which we all can say that's matching. But the question then came in to, of the pledges, what percentage would be a reasonable amount to consider? We had the money set aside, and whatever you agree with tonight for the cultural center, I would also ask that you agree with the railroad, because they are facing the same situation also, and that they have pledges coming in, and they're going to be wanting the same thing.
Right.
So it's not the question of do we have the money or not, but what do you want to set up as a premise for granting that money to both organizations?
That's the question.
Wait, what's the status of the purchase of the building, and what kind of arrangements have you made with Mr. Franklin on the payment?
Well, we would like to go ahead and buy that building in a couple of weeks. That's what we've been moving toward. We really can't, get in there and start working on the structure and determining, what we need to do until we actually get control of the building. We'd like to do that in those couple of weeks.
Wait, how much do you have in pledges? You got $40,000 in cash, and how much in pledges?
We haven't had a report in the last week or so, but I think it's almost $250,000.
Over a
3-year period.
3-year period. Yeah.
So are you going to be able to do a mortgage then based on that purchase or a
right,
purchase
our intent would be if the city would go ahead and fund the first $75,000 would be to get a mortgage for the difference between that and the purchase price of the building. And then as funds come in, we'd pay down that mortgage.
I have to say that, we don't have anything on paper as far as, why didn't you bring something tonight so that we could look at it? If we're going to talk about spending 75, we argue over $5 to pick up whatever, and here we're talking about many thousands of dollars.
Well, we asked him to set up a procedure to come in to city staff and request funding that you have already approved. And our recommendation on the procedure is that either for the depot or for the cultural center, that both are being worked through the Aiken Corporation, that we write a request to the city and saying based on these pledges, of which this much is cash, this much is future pledges, that you advance $75,000 against what we the information we furnish you.
But we don't have any information is what I'm saying. Could we get some, like with the depot too?
I don't think city council wants to approve each funding request. The information would go to city staff.
The intent we had was we were going to have either one of our CPAs who work for the city or have our auditors go ahead and audit it to make sure that that amount was in the checking account and that the pledges were there before we were going to issue a check, and that's what I've told Wade from the very beginning,
right,
that I wanted a letter from our auditor to be able to say that the funding was there. It just is a matter of, is it all cash or is it cash plus the pledges?
This is the purpose tonight is simply to establish the principle of the 90%.
Right.
My problem is I put the motion in, and when I made it, I thought it was going to be cash because I was, we were told that we can raise this money. Remember now, it was $1.2 million that's supposed to be raised, not
total of
$1.3 million,
right,
which is a lot of money. And
Pat, let me just say that I've been in a discussion with one firm and some others that they've committed roughly $85,000. That's a definite commitment. Reverend Slaughter's church, I don't think he might be saying this, has committed the same amount. And the church itself has committed its amount. My church has approved, based on its board, a commitment to this. You've got banks and credit unions that are good on their commitments. But the fiscal year with the folks that I'm working with immediately does not begin until January of 2005. So that's when we'll start getting some of that money. The budget cycle for this year ends end of this year. So
I understand. I think 90% is too high, Wade. I made the motion that it would be cash, and cash to me, as a banker, I don't know what that is. I would be willing to say, you got three-year commitments here. You got $250,000. So I would say, divide $250,000, make it a third. If it's a three-year commitment, you got, and then it would be rolling. So I think 33% is a more reasonable figure of saying we got, if you got $250,000 pledged over 3 years, remember that number should go up. It better be going up to about 1.2 million. I'd do it over the period of time that you got the years, which would be 33%, not 90%. 90% is too much. You understand what I'm saying, Mr. Mayor? I mean, you advance based upon how you think the money's going to come in. If you got $250,000 pledged and it's coming in over 3 years, and that number should change when you get the $250,000 will go to $400,000 or whatever, which would be 30 over the same period of time that your pledges are coming in. And that way, we adhere to the spirit of what we told the what we basically voted on. I could go along with that. I wasn't sure I was going to go along that way, but I would do the 33%, which should give you enough for your first year, and then you keep moving. You got 40 already, right?
Yeah.
33% of 250 is $83,333, so it should be all right. But 90% is too much. You understand what I'm saying, Mr. Mayor? In other words, you're taking the number of pledge years that you've got pledges for, and you divide that out, and that's what you give them credit for. And it should be okay.
Well, what we have is a campaign going on. This is just the tip of the iceberg of what the pledges that are coming in.
Mm-hmm.
There's about 40, 50 people working on personal contacts, and we're supposed to have a report on that
Friday.
Okay.
Thursday. I'm looking at both of these projects, and I think there's a little difference between the two of them. One, we're buying a building, and the other, we're going to build a building. And, you know, with the stipulations that you're putting on there, would that slow up the project for the depot?
Well, I'd like to ask the depot if that's, you know.
What have they raised?
How much has been raised for that?
The fund raise major drive hasn't started. It won't start until after the first of the year. Mac, you want to come up in?
We have about $10,000.
You know, I'm thinking there's a difference between the procedure of building a new building or buying one and looking at borrowing the money to do it. And I guess what I'm saying is that I think if you use, you know, some low percentage, that it's really going to slow down, could slow down the projects, particularly the depot.
Mac, what's your thought on this? I mean, as far as when it was match funded, what was your thought? Would it be cash raised or?
We really have not covered it particularly well. We had commitments from the city for $200,000, from the county for $200,000, and we're going to raise $250,000. And we had a Toyota car show here 2 weeks ago. That was one of our fundraisers. And they started a structured fundraising after the first year, as Wade just said. We have not gone out in the streets or contacted like the 2020 or the Cultural Center to raise these monies, but we feel sure that we can do that without any problem.
I guess the point being, though, the total budget of the depot is going to be roughly $750,000, right? So we have to have the $750,000 in hand before we can build it, right?
At least,
Or at least have enough. We can go to a bank and say we got these pledges.
I wouldn't hesitate if we had the pledges in hand to, you know, to go ahead. And I'm saying, you know, to go to a bank and say we'd like to borrow the money. But I'm saying that if the city, you know, puts this low percentage on the pledges, that may slow that project up.
Well, I guess my only point is all I'm doing is putting the percentage as they are pledged. I'm just putting the percentage. I'm giving you the pledges, but just do it over the time period that they are pledged for.
You know, I'm thinking a year from now, if what we're talking about is going to be a moot point anyway.
I do too. Right now, with my proposal, you would get your first $75,000. You already have it in the bank. You already have it. Your pledges and your other. Now, if we need to adjust that, I'd be glad if we need to look at it.
I think it would be more workable to have a larger percentage. You know, 75%. Certainly 75% based on the history of pledges are going to come in without any question.
I have no problem with 75%. If we were dealing with taxpayer, our own taxpayers' money, and I see this differently, and maybe I'm the only one who sees it differently, but if we were dealing with own taxpayers' money, I think it'd be one thing. We'd maybe be a little bit more cautious. But we're dealing with money from visitors and tourists coming in, paying us. I think we can afford to take some risk. And I don't think it's a big risk, personally. So to me, it's not a big risk. And if we can raise that or lower that down to 75, then I support that. Because I think both of these projects are going to go. I think they're going to be winners. They're going to add to our community. They're going to be additional assets to our community. And they'll generate some tourism. We don't know how much, but they'll generate some tourism. So that's my position. I support the 75. If you can deal with 75% of the money.
It seems to me, even with Pat's formula, you still qualify for the 75 this year.
Yeah, it really doesn't affect the my motion doesn't affect the Cultural Museum at all. It might affect the depot, but the depot has to get all of its pledges. Sure. And get a commitment that it's got $750,000 before they can start anything. Now, if you had that, I mean, if we had that, we can go to a bank and say, we got these pledges, let's go ahead and get started. Because think of it this way, if you got a 5-year commitment to give $750,000, you won't be able to start it for 5 years. Well, that means your cost of your building is going to be up and you have to go raise more money. So that's the way the things work. I mean, the churches, they get pledges, they go to a bank and say, we got 75% of it pledged, but we need the rest so we can and continue on through. So, you know, I mean, my problem with the whole thing, Wade, is I made the motion, and at the time that I made this, I said, I want the money. I want match funding to me is matched. It's there. We'll give you the money. You show us the money. And that's the way I said it. I mean, and I think it's going to work. Gave my own check. Yeah. And I believe in it. I think it's going to work. I just got a problem with how I wanted it done to start with.
Well, some of us are looking at it as pledges, and because I think pledges are as good as money in the bank.
You're an old banker now. You know better than that.
We talked about cash. Pat's absolutely right. We did. And I have to say I didn't support either one of them, and I still don't. And I'm sorry. I know some people are very excited about it, but I see so many other things that I think we need to be committing money that ultimately does come from taxpayers too. And I'm really disturbed about putting this money forward when we don't have the cash to match it, which is what, but I didn't vote for that either, so there we are.
Well, I suspect 5 years from now you'll look back and be
pardon
pleased.
Me?
I suspect 5 years from now you'll look back and be pleased with the two projects.
Well, I hope I will. I do, but I just don't think this, I think these are, I think we should have worked together on our, I don't know, I'm not going to start that again. I mean, we've been through this whole thing, but I think that we were assured there would be cash. I really heard that. And I know we did. I know we heard it. But no one talked about pledges at all. But whatever.
One thought here. The wording, as I understand it, talking to Roger, did not say cash.
Did not. That's correct.
I don't have it. I don't know what it said. But it said match.
Matching funds.
If we give your cash and I want match, I want cash. I mean, if we'll give you a pledge, right? We'll match it. But you know, I mean, when the I mean, you can vote for what you want to. I know what I said. I wanted match funds. When we give you a check, we got match funds. That's the way I intended it. And if the rest of the council doesn't agree with that, I understand. That's the way I meant it, and that's how I'm going to vote.
Well, I'm not going to vote against something we've already voted in favor of. I mean, this is up to, maybe it's up to interpretation here. I don't know.
Do you have the specific language there?
Yeah. Wade handed this to me. It mentions funds.
If it wasn't up to interpretation, we wouldn't be sitting here debating this. If there wasn't some question about whether what I meant when I made the motion, we wouldn't be here. Raj would already said it's okay. If there was, when I said matching funds, that's what I meant. So, I mean, you say 75, let's vote on it.
No. I'm not going to vote. I'm not going to change my mind if I voted on something. That's what you use the term cash, and that's what I question. Did it say cash?
Cash was not
it. No. It didn't say cash. No.
It is an interpretation question, we're asking a clarification, and the reason we're asking a clarification is really because it says funds, which means cash to me.
You've got a motion at 75%.
But I don't think 90% just sounds awfully high, and I don't think there's an impediment in keeping that at a lower figure, a more conservative figure. That's
75% certainly would be conservative. Based on history.
Let's call the questions.
Mr. Attorney,
yeah.
Let me ask attorney here what he thinks about the interpretation of what it said there.
No,
you haven't read it, but
I was reading over your shoulder. I don't disagree with you. I would think that funds would almost be synonymous with cash. Doesn't mean council can't revisit the issue and redefine what that word means.
But that's all I'm saying. Saying what I made the motion, okay, what I was thinking funds for the time. We're going to change that today, tonight. That's fine. You're going to give them 75. That's why we're here. You're going to give them 75% of it.
I understand. I just wanted to make sure. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, let's see. We don't have even a motion yet or a second on this.
The motion is, Mayor, is to allot 75% of the funds.
75% of the pledges.
100% of cash. 75%
of the match.
I'll second that motion, Mr. Mayor.
Okay. Any other discussion?
Mr. Mayor, also means that next year, if they don't come up with their 75% of pledges, then we don't, the funding doesn't go for next year, right?
Right.
Sure. Total. So we'll have a history next year.
The total amount of.
That's right.
We'll know next year if they got at least 75% of the pledges this year, on the first year, right?
Right.
Right. This is why I had stated earlier we would have our auditor look at it every year. When they come to us and say, we would like to have our cash, we would say, fine, let us audit it and make sure that the pledges or cash, whatever just council decides tonight, is there. So it's not city staff trying to make an interpretation.
But it's a different proposition for the Railway Museum.
That's going to work the same way. It'll work the same way.
I'm asking unless tonight, if you're going to define the funds for that one, it'd be nice if you could define it for both of them so
yes,
we don't have to revisit
right.
this
yes.
issue again a year or two from now.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay, you want to include that into your motion?
The railroad would be consistent with it.
Okay, Beverly too.
Certainly.
Same with the depot. Okay. Any other discussion? If not, show of hands, please. All in favor. Okay. Opposed. Okay.
5-2.
5-2. Okay. I think that's it, isn't it? If there's nothing else. We are stand adjourned.
10 minutes.
We thank the leadership, Aiken, for hanging around. Isn't this fun? Come back next time.